You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking New York Mets with MLB.com's Mets beat reporter, Anthony DiComo. Matt Harvey was apparently very impressive in his last throw, and it sounded like if he's not going to get into a game this year, he was at least able to throw some pitches in anger in simulation. How encouraging was it, was his last throw for the club?
Yeah, you know, how encouraging it was for us as casual onlookers versus for the team, I think there's maybe a little bit of a disparity there because we all see 95 on the radar gun and our eyes light up and we say, wow, this is Matt Harvey. Now, that does not mean that he is Matt Harvey as he was a year and a half ago. You know, he still has to prove that the control and the command are back. That's usually the last thing to come for Tommy John patients. And, you know, frankly, it's something we can't know until he actually gets into games, gets into a competitive environment, which isn't really going to happen until next March. But all that being said, you see a guy who used to throw in the upper 90s, cranking it up to 95 in a ho-hum simulated game in September. I mean, that's still some pretty heavy stuff. And it's definitely a good sign for the Mets going into next season because they're going to be counting on this guy big time.
What do you think? I mean, I know we've talked about this, but is everything still the same as far as his off-season plan? Now that the off-season has actually come for him, is the expectation that this will be a normal winter and a normal spring for Matt Harvey?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not going to be identical. The guy still is, as we speak right now, less than a year removed from Tommy John surgery. So he may need to, you know, crank it up a little bit earlier, maybe do a little outside strengthening work, that sort of thing, than he would usually do. And once he actually does get back on a mound in the spring and start throwing again, you know, they're going to take it a little cautious. He's not going to be maybe on the full restriction-free program that every other pitcher is going to be on. And you might see at the beginning of the year them holding him back a little bit, be it pitches in games or innings over the course of a game. And the reason for that is this is a team that has playoff aspirations for next season. This is a team that does not want to go down that Steven Strasburg route where they run out of innings and they get to October and the guy can't pitch. So those are things they're going to keep in mind, and they're going to sit down as soon as the season ends and really map out a plan for him, you know, in February and March and April and May, so that if they, you know, are playing meaningful games in September and October, he can be a big part of that.
In the more immediate, Jacob DeGrom is coming on really even better lately than he's been all year, which is impressive and it seems to me unusual for a rookie starting pitcher. Does it say anything in particular about what he's doing or how he's doing it that he is even better now in September than he was earlier in the year?
Well, what he's doing is he's developed into a bona fide strikeout pitcher, which he really wasn't coming up. You know, he had that game where he struck out the first eight batters in a row to start the game. That's not something that you would have expected from Jake DeGrom, just looking at his minor league profile coming up. You know, he's always had the velocity. He's obviously, you know, reached sort of another gear once he's come to the major leagues. But what's impressed me the most is just this guy knows how to pitch. He knows how to get strike one. And, you know, I asked Terry Collins about it, and he said, well, he takes advantage of the fact that hitters at this level are a little more patient. And if you can spot those strike one, strike two pitches, they're not going to swing at them because they're going to wait for a pitch they think they can handle. So if you're spotting them in the outside corner or on the inside corner, you can jump ahead 0-1, 0-2, 1-2 in this league. And once Jacob DeGrom does that, he knows how to elevate or bury that two-strike pitch, and he's really got a sense of how to put hitters away. So he's sort of developed into more of a swing-and-miss guy at this level than he ever was in the minors, and that's helped him really become one of the best young pitchers in, for my money, honestly, the rookie of the year favorite at this point for the National League.
Do you think this is the guy he really is going forward? I mean, do you think he is, if not a bona fide one, at least a front-of-the-rotation kind of pitcher?
You know, if you had asked me that question, Matthew, 3 months ago, I would have said no. I would have said this is a mirage. But I'm starting to buy in. I mean, granted, he's not going to strike out 10 batters for 9 innings, which he's nearly at that level right now. And maybe he's not a true one. Maybe he takes a step backwards next season. But even a small step back for this guy would be a pretty good year. And the beauty of pitching in the rotation that he's in is he doesn't need to be a one. I think everyone's expecting Matt Harvey to be the one going forward. And even if Matt Harvey can't do that, they have another fine candidate in Zach Wheeler who's having a pretty nice season of his own. So whether it's a one or a two or a three, I don't think anyone's caught up in that right now. But if we're having that conversation about what he is at the front end of the rotation, that's a pretty good thing for the Mets.
Did anybody in the organization see this coming in previous years, spring, at any point before he started doing it?
You know, he's a guy that a lot of people liked. There were always good reports of him coming up. He was just so under the radar. He was so low profile. And part of that was because of Matt Harvey and Zach Wheeler and Noah Syndergaard and these other big arms, even Rafael Montero, who were overshadowing them, And so, you know, he kind of flew through the system undetected almost. He was a Tommy John patient, so he lost a year of his development and was kind of the forgotten man for a long time coming up. And remember, he wouldn't have gotten a chance this year if a lot of things hadn't sort of conspired in his favor. Matt Harvey being hurt, Dylan Gee going down. You know, they wind up needing two starters in May instead of one. Rafael Montero was the guy who got the first call. And, you know, if they had only needed one starter and Rafael Montero had taken off, we might be looking at Jacob deGrom as a September call-up out of the bullpen, not really knowing what he could do in the rotation. So they got lucky, as well as Jacob deGrom got better. And, yeah, I don't think anyone could have seen it coming, to answer your question, in the sense that it happened. Maybe it would have happened otherwise, but I think this has been a very nice surprise for the Mets in 2014.
From the not really surprising at all category, it was pretty much confirmed this week that the Mets are pleased with Terry Collins, that he is apparently the guy for next year. It seemed fairly obvious. Was there ever any drama in that regard, or has that been what was coming all along?
No, that's pretty much been what was coming. I mean, look, Terry Collins hasn't won yet with the Mets. I think the front office has been very realistic with him. He hasn't been given a ton to work with since he started managing this team. And, you know, the front office likes the way he's developed these young players. He likes the way he's developed the pitching staff and worked with the pitching coach Dan Worthen to do that. You know, I think we've reached the point where the Mets want to start winning, and a lot of that is incumbent upon the front office to maybe spend a little more money and to maybe make the moves necessary to give Terry Collins a fighting chance. So he's going into a contract year next year, Terry is, and he might not have a ton of leeway when we start on opening day. But for right now, they like what he's done. He works well with the front office. He's not going to really throw anything up on its end in terms of the front office philosophies and what they want to do. He's a good soldier in that sense. So it's really a good working relationship. And unless there was a pressing need or desire to move on, which I don't think either side has right now, they're going to stick with Terry for the time being.
The other seeming news this week from Metsland was about the fences at Citi Field. They've already tweaked them in the past. It sounds like they're tweaking them again. First, is it your expectation that is going to happen, or is that kind of idle conversation right now?
Yeah, I think it's going to happen. It's not going to be a major overhaul like it was last time. But I do think they're going to move in part of that right center field fence, which is just death more on right-handed hitters who drives the ball the opposite way than it is on lefties who can still get it out there with a good poke.
Is this in particular reaction to anything, or is it just kind of an ongoing evolution?
Well, they've done myriad studies in terms of what would affect everything. And one of the guys is actually a left-handed hitter that they've looked at is Curtis Granderson. And it's something like 8 or 9 balls he's hit this year that would be out under a new fence configuration that were not out this year. You look at it, and obviously the Mets have to pitch here too, so it's tough to say how much of an advantage it would be. But when you've got a guy like Curtis Granderson who's having a very down year, and you've got a guy like David Wright who used to drive the ball to right center field all the time and just doesn't do that anymore, you wonder how much it could help specifically your team. And somebody joked, maybe it's sort of the new undervalued thing is just catering your stadium every few years or so to the team that you have. And you know, it's a cheaper way definitely than it would be to import an entirely new set of talent. It's just to cater your parts to what you have. You know, how much it ultimately helps, it obviously remains to be seen. What's interesting is when they moved in the fences the last time, home run spiked. They went way up, but overall offense actually stayed the same or even went a little down. So there are different things you have to look at. You have to look at the effect it has on triples. You know, when Citi Field first opened, Jose Reyes was great at hitting triples into those monster gaps. They don't have really a guy. I mean, Daniel Murphy is the line drive hitter that they have, but so it's not always the most obvious effect that you think. And, you know, does it turn the Mets from a mid-70-win team into a 90-win team? Of course not. But they think it can help them marginally. And, you know, if they're competing for a playoff spot next year, maybe that's the 1 or 2 win difference that they'll need.
All right. Well, Anthony DiComo, thanks for taking some time to talk here on MLB.com Extras. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Catch all of the second half action on MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service. Watch every out-of-market game streamed live online or on the go in true HD. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 14 subscription, allowing you to watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.